This is the Disability Visibility Podcast with your host, Alice Wong.
Welcome to the Disability Visibility Podcast. Conversations on disability politics, culture, and media. I'm your host, Alice Wong. Before we get started, take a listen to this.
From as early as I can remember, I wanted to swallow the world whole. Anything was possible. I just thought I would have more time.
I don't know what I did to myself. I don't think I can get up off the couch. I feel like my brain is misfiring.
Sometimes I wouldn't be able to speak.
Wow.
If you say too little, they can't help you. And if you say too much, they think you're a mental patient.
The doctor would tell me, you're just dehydrated. Everyone gets stressed.
You just heard a short audio clip from the documentary Unrest. Today's episode is all about disabled filmmakers and documentaries. There are quite a few documentaries that feature disabled people, but very rarely are they directed, produced, edited, or written by them. And that's something that needs to change. I'm in conversation with Jed Brea, the director and producer of Unrest, and Jim LeBret, co-director and co-producer of Crip Camp. We talked about the politics of representation, the power of disability narratives, the importance of documenting our cultures and communities, and how the filmmaking community can be more inclusive. Are you ready? Oh, away we go.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
So, Jed and Jim, thank you so much for being on my podcast today. I'd like to ask you both to just introduce yourself and just tell me what led you to filmmaking. Jed, do you want to go first?
Yeah, sure. So, thanks so much for having us on. I'm so excited. And so, I'm a documentary filmmaker, and I am a new filmmaker as well as a new person with a disability. And both of those things kind of came into my life at the same time, and I, in some ways, can't separate one from the other. So I got sick about 6 years ago now after having a really high fever and got worse and worse over the course of about a year. But every time I would try to seek help from the medical system, was essentially told either I wasn't sick at all or eventually that I was just stressed, until I finally became bedridden. And it was really in coming to realize that I wasn't going to get help from the medical system, and going online and finding this whole community of people who were also homebound and bedridden and had been living for decades with my disease, myalgic encephalomyelitis, or ME, that I started filming myself and making this documentary called Unrest.
Wonderful. Thank you. And welcome to the community.
Thank you. It's so good to be here. And Jim is the sound designer on the film, so that's how we met.
Yeah, it's like 6 degrees of separation, right?
Yeah. Well, I became aware of Jen's film on Facebook and just kind of reached out to her and said, hey, you know, sounds like a great film. And then, you know, I do documentary sound for a living. So I wound up working on the film. We wound up having just a incredible time. We mixed in Los Angeles, and we had a lot of time in the mix room, which you often do. And besides talking about, you know, that wind is too soft, or I don't like that sound, or let's bring the music into the room a little bit more, we got to talk a bit about illness and disability and kind of how one identifies themselves. And we just had these wonderful, meaty conversations. And I think, you know, out of that really kind of forged a lovely, you know, friendship, and we're kind of compadres to a lot of extent. Since the time of working on Unrest, I've started working on a documentary called Crip Camp. And Crip Camp is a story about a summer camp that I went to in the Catskill Mountains back in the very early 1970s. It's called Camp Jened. And I was a camper there from 1970 through 72. And then in 73, I worked in the kitchen. And there was a story there about these people who had gone to the camp in New York, this migration out to Berkeley in the 70s, largely because the support services of the Center for Independent Living were here, and there was just a lot of us were starting to migrate out here. I mentioned this story to Nicole Noonan, who's a wonderful documentary filmmaker, and she was taken by the story, did a little research on her own, and said, let's make the film together. And we're in the middle of production now. So that's how I've kind of gotten into filmmaking. You know, I mean, I've worked on well over 200 documentaries as a sound mixer and sound designer, but now finally I'm working on everything now and not just the audio post.
And there's so many ways to tell a story, whether it's, you know, based on, you know, autobiographical or based on real events, but I'd like to ask you both, you know, why documentaries compared to feature films or other ways of telling stories?
Well, I think, you know, for me, I think the story always comes first, and it's sort of what is the story that I want to tell, and how do I want to move people, and what are the worlds or the themes or the issues or the characters or the people that I want to explore. And then I think from that comes the medium, right? You sort of, you think of the story, or you find a story that you think is best as a documentary, or is it best as a fiction film, or is it best as a VR project, or is it best as an essay? And every story, I think, has a medium that it wants to express itself in. And I think nonfiction film I love in particular because it is such a challenge, and it's a constant process of discovery. So rather than sort of scripting and planning everything in advance, you're very much following real life as it unfolds. And then again, when you're in the edit, trying to figure out how to structure everything and kind of what is the essence to pull out that tells a truth that's truer than true.
This being my first documentary that I'm making myself, well, making with Nicole and Sarah, but the first time I'm involved with making a documentary, it's really interesting how the stories start revealing themselves. It's really kind of like you're going on a hike somewhere, but there's these forks in the road or these things that are calling out to you, said, you should look at this. And so keeping your eyes and ears and mind open for where there may be more meat to the story in places where you didn't expect it is pretty essential. And, you know, I'm already seeing it with our film in that there's just enough I still need to kind of uncover about the lives of certain people. But I think that's the great thing about documentary films is that, A, like Jennifer said, you're really dealing with real life. And secondly, that there is a sense of discovery that really makes things interesting, right? But I think that in narrative film, be it television or in the movies, that, well, we've seen a lot of some good films about disability in narrative film and a whole bunch of films that kind of feel like they're the same old negative stereotypes. You know, Me Before You and the beautiful, handsome guy who becomes a quadriplegic deciding he's better off, you know, getting himself euthanized. Or, you know, Million Dollar Baby, you know, please kill me now that I'm a quad. And it's, people are not seeing anything in the middle, you know, in regards to what our lives are like, and that it's not like the worst thing that can happen. So I'm really kind of, I'm starting to see more and more in the media around, you know, television shows like Speechless that, you know, have an actor with cerebral palsy playing the part of JJ, and I think all of these things, you know, go a long way for demystifying what it means to know somebody with a disability, or to have somebody with a disability, or to date somebody or employ somebody with a disability. And so I think both nonfiction and fiction media is really one of the major keys in really improving the lives of everyone, not just people with disabilities.
I saw Unrest. It just, you know, I have to tell you, Jen, I really, really, truly enjoyed it. And, you know, one of the things that's really, I think, seductive about documentaries is that, you know, I feel like I know you, even though I'm sure I don't really, really know you. But, you know, I feel like as an audience member, you know, you give us this kind of insight, you know, this kind of like, this really, you know, you opened up yourself. But then, you know, also, you know, I'm trying to be mindful that, you know, directors and, you know, writers just, you know, the way that they choose what they edit and how they show what they reveal in the films is also definitely considered. So, you know, what is your thought of, Jen, in terms of just like the decisions you made in terms of editing? And how much you wanted to reveal about yourself without giving, like, all of yourself away? Did you ever have those kind of debates or challenges?
I didn't really, actually, until sort of after the fact. I had a friend who is a writer who told me very early on, I mean, actually before I got sick and before I started making the film, you know, produce what you have it in you to write and to tell without judgment, at least at the sort of first phase of trying to explore the kind of depth and shape of a story. And so I remember thinking about that as I was filming and realizing that my job was to capture the truth of what I was living and what I saw the people around me in my community living, and to try to make it as true, as real, as present, and as realistic and raw as possible, as authentic as possible. And that I could then, you know, when we were in the edit, then decide, you know, is something too intimate, or is this really what I want to show or say? But to sort of not make those judgments while I was capturing the footage. I think the hard part came when we actually started to show it and do late rough cut screenings to larger audiences. You know, in those screenings, I felt incredibly vulnerable and incredibly exposed, and it was really hard. But I had the instinct that I made the right choices, and realizing that my exposing and sharing those very personal moments of pain actually helped, you know, for the audiences, especially people who are personally affected, to transform their own pain by being able to sort of see themselves on a screen for the first time, to see their lives and their experiences mirrored in the culture, which they almost never get to see. I mean, there are so few accurate and authentic representations of disability in our culture. And I think the same thing is also true for chronic illness, where so many of the narratives are about, you know, either you die and it's tragic, or you are miraculously healed and it's, you know, happily ever after. Like, what is the narrative arc of a story that doesn't end, where life just keeps on going, right? And where the only resolution to find is not in like healing your body, but in shifting your perspective, in going on an emotional journey. And so I think I wanted to really show that.
Yeah, I mean, I think as I watched your film, you know, I felt like, you know, you documented really just a lot of the dark and low moments, and I thought, you know, this film was really, I don't know, you tell me if I'm making a presumption, but it seemed like this project itself was a lifesaver for you, not just being involved in a larger, you know, online community, but also documenting your story and just getting your story out there.
Yeah. No, I think that definitely is the case. I mean, there's a part of a place in the film where I say, you know, sickness doesn't terrify me and death doesn't terrify me. What terrifies me is that you can disappear because someone's telling the wrong story about you. And I think that was very much how I felt at the beginning of the process, that I was being, in a sense, I was being erased in a real kind of metaphysical way by a system and a kind of public story that was wrong and wasn't my experience, but that was also endangering my life and endangering other people's lives.
Then I went online and found thousands of other people just like me.
Yeah, I'm completely bedridden.
It's just like I'm just watching my life disappear.
I have ME, CFS, that's chronic fatigue syndrome.
Historically, you can see illnesses very similar to this called many different things.
I saw someone collecting the other day for ME. That's the one where don't feel like going to work today.
It's gonna pass.
Okay. Chronic fatigue syndrome. Yeah, I'm tired too.
The film was very much an act of reclaiming my own right, like my own right and power over my narrative. And I remember very consciously thinking, like, I want to build a microphone that's bigger than the one that's shouting me down in this moment. And I have to do that. I must do that. Because if I don't do that, I'm not going to survive. And so I think it was about power, and it was about taking back power. And I also think it was about a kind of emotional healing where, you know, I've always been someone who's felt things very deeply. I was always a crier. And when I got sick, I just because of the sort of extreme low capacity and neurological issues, I just couldn't feel emotions very strongly. Like it was something that would crash me and it could feel very, very ill. And so I had to kind of put a lot of that grief I felt for myself in a box and kind of compartmentalize my feelings about it for the first time in my life. And so interviewing other people with my disease and hearing their stories and both being that listener and then also constructing their stories in the edit, it gave me a way to deal with my own grief for my life, but with a bit of distance. I think when you first become disabled, if you were born able-bodied, I think there's a way in which all you're trying to do is think about, how do I get back to my old life? And you're fighting really hard. And maybe that's the denial part of the grieving process, I'm not sure. But how do you let go and then start to sort of see what's good and what is possible and what is even different and better about where you are now? And talking to all of these people who had been in that same position, but were like 5, 10, 20 years on, I learned so much. And so I think it was, you know, in that way, telling my own story, telling other people's stories, and also learning from people that really helped me to make that transition to a person with a disability and to kind of regain, to rebuild my identity and to survive the experience. So yeah, I think on all of those levels, the film definitely saved my life.
And I think what was great was that, you know, your film was not just about you, but it was really about the larger community. Because I think a lot of people assume that people who are quote-unquote homebound or bedridden, you know, have nothing to offer. And through the film, you see a lot of your friends and people in the community with incredibly rich lives and incredibly active lives from their home, from their bed. And I think that is something that we don't see enough of. And I think that's why having documentaries and also having disabled filmmakers is so important. And I love that both of you are disabled filmmakers and that your projects are at different stages. You know, Jen, your film is out there in the world, it's completed. And Jim, you know, you're still kind of in the middle. And tell me a little bit more about, I guess, the present status and what you see for the future.
Well, boy, I could go on about four different tangents immediately. I think that one of the things that drives me is that there's a story here about my community, my culture, that I think is really important for the world to hear and see. So it's rather motivating to, you know, sometimes a little bit scary in that I really want to do this right. You know, and no film can cover every single facet of, you know, a story. but I just really, I feel really compelled to represent the people for who kind of came out of this camp and the experience that we had and how that shaped our lives as activists or people just very, very motivated to have a better life. I feel very motivated to show the unindoctrinated really kind of what life with a disability is about. So where, you know, where kind of where I am now with this process is we're a little bit more than halfway through shooting. We did film Judy Heumann, who so many people in the disabled community know. Judy was a camper at Camp Jeanette in the 60s, wound up being a counselor in the early 70s. And she, for me personally, was the reason I got into any kind of disability civil rights work. And I got really excited. I mean, I think when you grow up with a disability, or once you acquire a disability, you see injustice. You see people making assumptions about your capabilities or what your worth is that are completely wrong.
And for your project, what are some of the, you know, current challenges you face in terms of getting it completed?
Well, I think you'll find funding for any film project or any project like this is really one of the kind of the key hurdles that one has to overcome. We're all staying optimistic. We hope to do about 3 or 4 more days of shooting, and would love to take a trip down to the South. And so I'm optimistic because I think we have a universal story.
I think that's so important, Jim, what you're saying, because if we're having conversations about how do we create a culture that reflects the people in it, and how do we use storytelling as a way to sort of shift perspective and shift the power dynamics. Overall, I think people who are fighting for, you know, within the film community, but also just more broadly for women, for people of color, for gay and transgender people, they don't think about us. And I say that because I'm so often invited to participate in fellowships or on like panels about diversity for my other identities, but never for this one. And so I always turn every women in film panel into like a women, people of color, and people with disabilities panel, from stage, but it's never anything anyone thinks about. And I think part of what the work that I hope to do, and that I think, Jim, it really sounds like you're already doing, is to try to really have those conversations to say, hey, like, some of the experiences that you've had are actually not that different from some of the experiences that we've had, and some of the ways that you're trying to make the world more equal and inclusive are not that different, and that we have to include this story as a part of all of those stories, in part because that will make all of us more free. Like, it's not just about our community. And so I'm very excited about that coming across in Crip Camp and in our conversations as we go forward.
And I really appreciate what you two are doing within the filmmaking community, because I think, again, you know, pushing that idea that disability is part of the overall broader, you know, diversity conversation.
You know, Sarah, my wife, she, you know, when I say why aren't people, when they're talking about diversity, and where's the panel on disability, where's the inclusiveness on disability, and I start thinking out loud, and I'm saying to her, you know, I just don't think people want to deal with this. I think they're scared of dealing with it. And Sarah says, you'd be lucky if that's what's going on. You're not even on their radar. And we see this time and time again. You know, this past summer I see these wonderful photographs on Facebook of people at like this workshop by this organization or that, and it's like in rustic cabins in the Northeast, and it's like, you know, I got a film coming up, you guys have got to start thinking about this. When I hear rustic, I see stairs and gravel paths, and you know, and gee, we're going to do canoeing as, you know, as a community building exercise, and I'm thinking, well, maybe we could put some pontoons on my wheelchair, but, you know, so you got to think about me now because I'm coming next year. You got to get on this.
And also, I think it's part of, I think, you know, the ableism around us, that, you know, a lot of people just presume that filmmaking as a activity is difficult and inaccessible. So, of course, you know, people with disabilities can't be filmmakers. And there are a lot of people now with disabilities who are making their own films, whether it's on YouTube or social media, or actual documentary films like YouTube. So, you know, how do you encourage more people who are disabled, who are interested in filmmaking, but somewhat hesitant or intimidated? What would be your advice?
I think so many times, what prevents anyone, whether it's a person with a disability or you know, a woman or a man or really anybody, from becoming something that they might want to be, is that they can't even imagine it for themselves. Like it doesn't even occur to them to dare to dream the dream. And I think sometimes the dreams that are hardest to dream are the ones that we don't already see out there for us as models and as examples. And I think that a part of why you don't see more people with disabilities making films is because people with disabilities aren't making films. And so, I mean, they are making films, but they're not visible, right? And I think I think that's what I worry about the most. And so if, you know, a part of the logic of like, well, we don't host panels about this because nobody cares because there aren't people making films, it's a sort of chicken and egg vicious cycle thing. And so I would say that, you know, be conscious that you are going to have to forge your own path, both within the community of filmmakers as well as for yourself, whatever your specific disabilities or constraints are. But that, I think we live in a time now where the world is much more receptive, and the technology that exists allows you to make films in ways that maybe you could never make them before. I was bedridden through almost all of production and directed using Skype and remote feeds and like every technological hack I could find. And you'll be able to reach audiences in a way that you wouldn't have been able to have before. So I think I would offer that hope, but to understand also that, you know, that it's not easy. And I think part of how we get there is by forming community and forming fellowship. And as I've gone and traveled with Unrest, you know, I've met filmmakers and also actors and other creatives with other disabilities who come out and see the film. And in some ways, I don't know, had almost like given up on storytelling because they didn't know quite what to do or how to do it. And so I think there is a need for more fellowship so that artists with disabilities and filmmakers in particular can connect with each other and share stories and share strategies. And so that, I mean, Jim and I do that for each other, but it needs to be, you know, it should and needs to be a much, you know, more organized and I think kind of bigger group of people having these conversations.
This podcast is a production of the Disability Visibility Project, an online community dedicated to creating, sharing, and amplifying disability media and culture. All episodes, including text transcripts, are available at disabilityvisibilityproject.com/podcast. You can also find links to the documentaries by Jen and Jim on our website. The audio producer for this episode is Geraldine Asu. Introduction by Latif McFound. Theme music by Wheelchair Sports Camp. Subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. A lot of blood, sweat, and tears to go into every episode. If you're able and willing, you can support our work by going to our Patreon page at patreon.com/DVP. That's patreon.com/DVP. Thanks for listening. To see you on the internet. Bye. Stop, drop, dance off.